Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Those people at Woodmo did a lot of great work for a long, long time. The largest employer in Snyder County. Taylor, great job. Today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Online? Easy. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I don't care whether it's auto, home, life, business, combination. They'll get you the right insurance. You're covered. They will work very hard to find you the best price. And customer service means everything to them. That's why they've been in business for decades. And they give back. The Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament was another huge success to benefit the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Online? Easy. Go to purdyinsurance.com. You want to deal with the best? Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Gee, I wonder what the play-by-play call of the day is.
Harris plays off the ball. Kyle and Siakam screen for Leonard. Leonard has it out top. Leonard against Ben Simmons. 2 seconds to go. Kawhi Leonard hangs. Fire shot up. It rims. And it went in. Toronto wins 92-90. Are you kidding me? Suspended animation. A pause. And then the ball went in. Kawhi Leonard has won the game.
Let's give Tom McGinnis credit for being the great professional he is. He is the Sixers play-by-play voice, and he called that beautifully. He really did. And you know it had to be a dagger. Well, Yaron Weitzman, NBA writer, Bleacher Report. First of all, welcome, and have you ever seen an ending like that?
No, thanks for having me. And no, I mean, definitely not. I was there, so definitely not live, but... No, I mean, I was shocked to learn. I don't know if you were as surprised as I was. I was shocked to learn after the game that that was the first true Game 7 buzzer beater in NBA history, which was kind of surprising.
I was stunned when I heard that.
Yeah. So, right? So, if that's the case, then the answer has to be no, I've never seen that, right?
Right. Now, just so everyone understands, the Michael Jordan shot over Craig Elo in the Bulls-Cavs series was a Game 5er. So there, you know. So oh, this is game
that's
seven.
That's the caveat, right? That's exactly.
Yeah. But still, amazing. And I thought. Now you were there. You saw it. I mean, I thought the Sixers defended it well. What did you think?
Yeah. Well, if I tell you, you know, you're going to have to hit a shot falling into the corner, fading away over 7-1 dude, outstretched arms. You know, like I would say, you take that, right? The most, what I found really interesting, though, was listening to Kawhi after the game kind of break down and explain all the thought that went into that shot. He kind of talked about how he knew his last shot was short, so he knew he'd have to get more arc on it. You saw that. He talked about how, again, in the last series against Orlando, they'd run the same play, and I think he said there were like 3 seconds left, and he did a catch and shoot. So then this time he knew there was 4 seconds left, so he knew he had time to dribble and get to a different spot. And, I mean, if you look back and watch the play, right, he catches it, and he basically sprints away from Simmons and the track that he knew was coming into that corner and went to that spot. So it's kind of fascinating when you see, obviously, luck plays a role anytime you get four bounces.
Right.
You kind of it's interesting, and it's pretty cool when you see these guys, how much work behind the scenes, whether it's in the gym, whether it's actually mental thought process and planning, goes into making these kind of moments.
All right. It took Kawhi Leonard 39 shots to get 41 points. Now, in a day where it looked like everybody was stuck in mud offensively, in the end, I know 39 shots to get 41 points, to be honest, is not a great offensive day. I mean, I know the point-wise it is, yeah, but it's a lot of attempts to get there. But what makes him the difference maker on a floor for any team he's on?
I mean, it's like you're saying, right? So two things, right? Well, I guess it's more than two things, but it's the ability to generate, get his own look. And you mentioned it, and last, I agree with you, right? Normally, like, you 39 shots, you say, okay, that's not good. Nobody else on his team wanted to shoot yesterday or wanted to create, right? So, like, when he was taking shots, that was out of necessity. So it's the ability to create your own shot, the fear, the confidence to take it, or lack of fear in taking it. And then also, I mean, let's not forget, he's the best, or whatever, top two, three, whatever it is, defensive players in the league, right? So they put him on Jimmy Butler last night, and that's one of the big reasons why Jimmy Butler has his worst game of the postseason, and in a game where the Sixers needed him. So, I mean, yeah, he's Kawhi, top three, top best player, second best, three, four, whatever. Like, you know, in that first tier cutoff, he's right there. So
it is very easy to go through something like this and then overreact. You watch the Sixers now, and obviously Embiid, Simmons, Butler. What do you think of Philadelphia moving forward?
I mean, they have one of the most interesting, intriguing off-seasons coming up here, right? Because you mentioned Simmons, they can give him a look. They can, he's due for an extension, or they can offer an extension if they want. So, you know, the question is, you want to, how much do you worry about his postseason struggles the past couple of years and the jump shot? Are you someone who believes that that's something that gets better? Or are you someone who believes that's a fatal flaw? So there's that. There's the Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris, or unrestricted, or sorry, free agents, assuming Jimmy Butler declines his player option, which he will. There's all the talk, you know, the ownership has made it quite clear that Brett Brown was on the hot seat, so who knows what happens with them. And we have to see how Joel Embiid, whether he can continue to stay healthy, and whether that's, you know, you saw the end of the year, sort of the breakdown. But I'm not even just talking about him being sick, but just the knee and tendonitis, stuff like that. It's really interesting. It's really, really interesting. If I were them, and, you know, no one asked my advice, but if I were them, I would bring everyone back and run it back again. The starting lineup, I think, was, in the regular season, the post-Tobias Harris trade starting lineup was the best, statistically the best five-man group in the NBA, I believe. I think the biggest their downfall was that they had no backup center, right? We saw it in the minutes when Joel Embiid went off the floor. That's when Toronto built their lead, that gave them the win. It seems like an oversimplification, but that's really what it came down to. So if I were them, I'd kind of bring everyone back and try to bolster the bench a little bit and go from there.
I want to say Greg Monroe is a -9 or something like that.
The minutes. If you look at the minutes, I wish I had it in front of me. Like they were outscored by like 100 points when Embiid was off the floor, right? It's something crazy like that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's insane. And that is the swing number in the series. And when it comes to Simmons, it's quite simple. I would not ask Ben Simmons to go out and work on his 3-point shot. I want him to be a really good 15-foot jump shooter. Right. Let's just like minimize this. If he's a good 15-foot jump shooter, you do have to play him slightly different.
Yep, I would that, and I would add to that free throws, right? And because I think that affects how he finishes and his lack of aggression, right? So him being confident to go to the line. And, you know, when he finishes, you see it, like, you know, not he gets compared to Giannis a lot, you know, guys without shots. But Giannis, when he takes the ball to the hoop, he's going through people. He's going strong to the rim. Simmons is kind of a little floating away, you know, tossing up right-handed layups, stuff like that. So I don't know. Maybe that could be his style of play. I would guess the not wanting to get fouled and trying to avoid contact is the reason for that. And I'm with you. The people sometimes compare him to Rajon Rondo, and I always think that comparison is off because Rondo – it's like Rondo wasn't a great shooter, but one, Rondo shot it, and like statistically, it was because he was wide open, but he was actually decent from like the 15-foot area. Not because he's a good shooter, but because he's figured out enough to, okay, you're going to leave me open here, I'll shoot it. Simmons won't even take them. I don't think he took a shot outside. I think the number is he didn't take a shot outside of 12 feet the entire postseason. That just can't work today in today's NBA.
Yeah, it's like John Lester not throwing to first. When you look at Toronto now, I want to get into a little bit of big picture. We know that Toronto is an awesome hockey town, obsessive about it. Yet the Raptors now have gone to a spot that they have not gone to before. What have they done basketball-wise, not just in Toronto, but what have they done in Canada for basketball?
In terms of what? In terms of, you know, inspiring people. I mean, Toronto was a number. It's like a bunch of number one players. It was Wiggins, RJ Barrett, Canadian, if I remember correctly, right? There's Anthony Bennett, which I'm not exactly naming guys. You know, it's not, maybe now you don't get number one pick if you get number one
Nick
pick.
Nick Stauskas?
Maybe that's not a good sign.
Nick Stauskas?
Right, exactly. So those guys, yeah, that's there.
Steve Nash.
It's funny. I'll tell you, like, when I was there for the series, right, back and forth. every Uber driver I had was and first of all, they are incredibly friendly, almost too much so. Sometimes, you know, you get an Uber, you want to go down on your phone. I'm not trying to talk about everything, but, and you don't want to be the guy who's a jerk and says, you know, I'm good now, but, like, they're asking, they're finding out what I do and start picking my brain and giving me their Raptors takes. But separately, yes, but they are people love the Raptors there. I mean, they really, you know, they definitely inspired a sort of I don't know what I call it, community fandom. That's not the right phrase, but you know, there's definitely love there. And I think, and the Kawhi thing. I mean, it's gonna be fascinating to watch, right? You're mentioning in terms of what does for the city or for, you know, basketball there, but I think so much of that comes back to what does Kawhi decide to do this summer? Like, is he gonna stay or is he gonna go? And if he stays, it's gonna become a really one of those bonds. It could be one of these things where you see a bond between a city and a superstar. If he goes, who knows? The Raptors are gonna probably rebuild, and we'll see what happens from there.
Give me a checklist now for the Eastern Conference Final. Giannis in Milwaukee and Kawhi in Toronto.
Checklist for what?
As to what swings that series one way or the other to which team can get to the finals.
I think so. I was surprised, and I think this is one of the cool things about basketball. You see in the NBA, you see this. I was surprised that Toronto's a really good team, and you see this with lots of teams and lots of players, and yet we came second round, and they were so, and they have good players, and yet it looked like they were dependent and reliant on one guy, right? And I just, to me, it's going to come down to, can they get anything from these other guys, from the Lowry, Siakam, Danny Green, Marcus Gasol? Right. Will these guys be aggressive and help give Kawhi some help? I don't know if Kawhi can go for 40 a game against Milwaukee. Milwaukee's really good. Like, we kind of, you know, we've all been looking for other teams, but they've pretty much been the best team statistically, stylistically. They have the guy, defense, offense, they have the MVP probably all season, right? And you watch them play, and they're just a team. The pieces fit. Everyone knows their roles. They're built around the star. It sort of clicked from really, like, what was it, week one it clicked? It's really fascinating to watch. It will be, and I think it's also kind of cool, right? It's kind of like the anti. In recent years, we've seen super team versus super team, and this sort of seems like one-on-one, right? Giannis versus Kawhi, and we'll see who's better. I would expect, I'd be surprised if Toronto won, I guess is how I would phrase it.
On the other side, Denver actually had the best record in the NBA, home record, I mean. Denver had the best home record in the NBA. Game 7, they lose to Portland. So now you got Portland, Golden State. I know Portland's had to change up a bit because of a critical injury. Durant might be back for Game 2 or Game 3 in that. How do you look at that series with Portland against Golden State?
I just think Portland, it's going to be tough for them, right? I mean, they've done a great job. It's going to be tough, even with Durant out. I just don't think the matchup's great. So what I'll say rooting for them, that's the wrong phrase. I like what they represent in terms of, we see so much today in NBA, you know, like championship or bust. And if you feel like your team has plateaued, you reset, you get rid of everyone, you start again. It's kind of like everyone wants to avoid being the quote-unquote Joe Johnson Hawks. But Portland's a good example. There's something to be said for running it back. You have good players and you have continuity and taking your shot. And, you know, there are people who are calling for, and I think it's been reported that they considered it, you know, calling for kind of a breakup last year after getting swept by the Pelicans in the first round. Instead, they bring it back, and now they're in the conference finals, and you get a shot against the team whose best player has a sprained ankle, and suddenly the breaks start lining up, and you have a shot to make the finals. And I think it's a cool example, and one that's worth for other NBA teams looking at. So that being said, I think it's going to be a really tough matchup. I mean, there's a reason that Golden State has had done well with them in regular season matchups over the past few seasons.
Brad Stevens went to the Celtics. Billy Donovan went to Florida a long time ago. John Calipari went to the Nets. What did you think about John Beilein going to the Cavaliers?
I was surprised. I'll preface this. I don't cover college. I haven't had any interaction really with John Beilein, or, you know much about him other than what we all read. But the part that surprised me was, one, I'm always surprised when someone leaves their cushy gig that they can stand for life for a job that is the opposite of that. And there's no gig that is more opposite of that, maybe in all sports, than working for Dan Gilbert and the Cleveland Cavaliers, right? So I found that interesting, and I found it interesting that the Cavs, after interviewing a bunch of younger assistant coaches who all kind of had the player development background and, like, the Kenny Atkinson mold types, went for a 60-something-year-old college coach. So it doesn't mean anything wrong with that, but it was just kind of out of left field from all sides. So I was surprised, but, you know, I'm all for out-of-the-box hires. Like, you know, I think sometimes these pools become, oh, this guy, you know, who's recycled, and we kind of recycle the same guys over and over. That said, I have long lost faith in the Cleveland Cavaliers process in terms of hiring, making you kind of move. There you go.
And you're on the last part I have is deals with the lottery, because the ping pong balls, I think, go tomorrow night. And to the credit of the Cavaliers, they will once again play a prominent role in what we're about to watch. Anything intriguing to you other than where maybe the Knicks fall in this?
I think this year's lottery is actually really intriguing, and I know that sounds stupid because, like, how could a team win a bunch of ping pong balls become intriguing? But I think because this offseason, we always talk up off seasons, and then you look back and it ends up being like, oh, it was just Gordon Hayward changing teams, and like that really make a difference. This offseason is going to be one where we actually have, you know, there are difference makers on the move. We know the free agents like Durant and Kawhi, but the Anthony Davis thing, I think that's why I find the lottery intriguing. Like, Anthony Davis is a top five pick, whatever you want to call it. He's an A-plus player, an A-lister, who we know is on the market, and whichever teams get high in the lottery will have, and there are teams in the lottery who we know he wants to go to. So however the lottery falls out will influence, will Anthony, could very well influence where Anthony Davis falls out. So to me, that's kind of what makes this all really intriguing.
Right, and Kyrie Irving as to what he wants to do is maybe a supplemental
right,
exactly. to somebody else.
Exactly, right? There's so many, this kind of feels like, Durant's the first domino, but this will feel like the first domino we see taken out, if that makes sense. It's a poor analogy, yep. But you know what I mean? In terms of setting up the offseason, this is kind of the beginning.
Makes complete sense. Yaron, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Hope we get to catch up with you again shortly.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Yaron Weitzman, NBA writer, Bleacher Report, Dick Girardi, final half hour. We will get more into the departure of John Beilein from Michigan for the Cleveland Cavaliers and also some new college basketball rules on the horizon as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance. All right, great to have you with us. Again, John Beilein leaving Michigan to take the job of the Cleveland Cavaliers. To be honest with you, you know what? You're John Beilein. You're looking at the mess that is college basketball, and yes, there is a mess around college basketball. You get a 5-year deal for millions of dollars a year, and guess what? You've got to sit there and you got to look at it and say, you know what? And John Beilein is not, he's taking his time at each stop. It's not as if he gave Michigan a couple of years and took off. He gave him 12. And he, his contract's up at the age of 71. He's going to make a lot of money between now and then. Not a little, a lot. And really, they're different games. I don't think people realize the college game to the NBA game, it really is a different game. How it's played, the shot clock. I'll give you an example. In college basketball, there are a lot. Okay, in terms of the percentage of out-of-bounds plays, there are more out-of-bounds plays in men's college basketball from the baseline than the sideline. In the NBA, it's the reverse. There are many, many more because of the ability to move the ball to the front court late in games. There are many more plays from the sideline. I mean, that you're like, oh, what's the big deal of that? It's different, believe me. Now, John Beilein offensively is always been a superior coach. Luke Yaklich, whom he brought in from Illinois State, really is the guy that's been the architect behind the defense you've seen Michigan play the last few years. Now, what they're going to do coaching-wise, I don't know. Can't even begin to guess. Penn State men's lacrosse team gets Loyola of Baltimore. On Sunday, noon, East Hartford, Connecticut, right to go to the Final Four if they can win. Wow. So,
at perfect timing, you'll be there. How cool is that?
I will be there. I'm looking forward to it, actually.
Absolutely.
just the way it worked out.
Who'd have thought when your Boston Red Sox ticket exchange happened deep in the middle of winter, this would turn into a nice double bubble sports weekend for you?
Well, it was interesting. It was my options. I wasn't given these options. Or trying to get tickets for this past weekend with Seattle or this weekend with Houston. And I ended up picking this weekend with Houston because this past weekend was Mother's Day.
And family time with one of the kids, too.
Yeah. So, well, that's why I'm doing it. I'm actually going so my son and I can go and do something together because he's the one that lives the furthest away.
And it's out of here!
Get a home run of a deal with SMC. Sunbury Motors Ford has incredible May deals that will have you cheering too. Just listen, Ford's MVP, the top-selling 2019 F-150 truck, has 0% financing for up to 72 months. Plus, save up to $13,000 off. And SMC has 65 to pick from. 2019 Ford Escape start at $17,485. And SMC has 47 to choose from. Take $7,500 off 2019 Ford Explorers, $8,000 off 2019 Ford Edges and Echo Sports, and a whopping $8,500 off 2019 Ford Escapes. And you can hit a grand slam with up to $12,000 off Ford Expeditions. In May, SMC is better than the ballpark. Sunbury Motors Ford, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. I don't care if the auto, home, life, or business insurance. Go with the ones who are the best at customer service. That's Purdy Insurance. You can go online to purdyinsurance.com. All right, John Beilein becomes the new head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. 5-year deal. Joining me, my broadcast partner over the last 15 seasons of Penn State basketball, Dick Girardi. Hello, DJ.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. It's not as if John Beilein hasn't shown any interest in the NBA. He has. So when you heard the news today, what did you think?
Surprised, not shocked. Not shocked for the reasons you just cited. Sounds like if the Pistons job had been offered last year, John may very well have taken it. Brendan Quinn, who of course covers the team so well for The Athletic, is reporting that. So I take that as gospel. So, yeah, John has been interested in the NBA, and I don't know the particulars of this deal, other than it sounds like it's 5 years. I'm sure it's for a substantial amount of money, a major rebuild. He's not walking in, obviously, to anything good unless LeBron's coming back and hasn't told anybody yet. But, yeah, it's always been interesting with John. If you look at his career arc, it's high school, junior college, Division II, Division I jobs, each one a little better than the next one, to a number of Big Ten championships, a couple of national championship game appearances at Michigan. So, yeah, this is the last level. This is it, man. This is the elite. And I think before he got out of it, he obviously wanted to take a chance to see how he would do.
And he's never rushed out of anywhere. He's always, whenever he's gone someplace, he's actually stayed for a while at Michigan. It was a dozen years he ended up staying. So he's not a guy that's ever, you know, he's moved up the ladder, but he's also done it at his own pace.
Yeah, that's really well said. He's not Larry Brown, who was 3 or 4 years, and that was about it for Larry at a typical job. But John has always had – he's also never been a 25-year, I'm staying there forever guy. That's just not been his MO, but it's always been because he's in demand. because he's had such great success at wherever he's been. But, yeah, this is going to be fascinating because he's inheriting a bad team. They'll hopefully get a good draft pick, but they are quite a long way from contending. And I've said this for years, Steve. I know the NBA fairly well. I watch a lot of it. I live in an NBA city. I just don't think there's any comparison between how the two sports are played.
I agree.
It's coached differently. It's played differently. The only things that are the same are the size of the court and the rim is 10 feet from the floor. But other than that, it's really dramatically different. So we'll see how a guy who's coached obviously at a million levels will do at the level where it's very, very different than what he's used to.
Yeah, let me give you the fans one subtle difference. In the college game, there's a lot of baseline out-of-bounds plays, a lot. But in the NBA, there's sideline out-of-bounds plays. And that's a bigger difference than people realize.
Yeah, and it's just that's one, and I could give you 100 more. 24-second clock.
Yep.
Everything is just speeded up. Obviously, the talent of the players, the coach has less control than he does in college, where if a player is bothering you, you can just say, you know what, you're gone. You lose your scholarship. And now you're dealing for the first time with guaranteed contracts. You're dealing with massive egos, agents. Look, parents can be difficult. You can talk to a lot of college coaches, but agents are a little different because there's money involved. So, yeah, it's a very different structure than what John has been used to. And he's always been very much of a guy whose players accede to his wishes. There isn't a lot. You don't hear a lot of negativity coming out of the program. You don't hear a lot of players saying anything. A lot of things are pretty closed up there. And I wonder, Steve, too. I know he'd had an interest in it, but I wonder if what happened with the really good team he had this year, they obviously had another great season.
Yep.
But then one of his players' dads, that would be Jordan Poole's dad,
yep,
comes out after the season and says, you know what, there's no real reason for Jordan, I believe was a sophomore, right? He had two more years left.
Sophomore.
If he wanted to play.
Yep.
To come back to school because he's not going to get a chance to play point guard and he won't get any better. And I got to think Coach Beilein took that to heart, like, you know, what is going on here? And maybe that was at least part of the reason Iggy's gone, too. So two of his guys he thought were going to be huge for next year. I think that's part of it. I don't think it's all of it. Obviously, he had his eye on the NBA for a while.
Yeah, I was going to add, that actually was the next part. Poole, for example, I wasn't going to get any better. Well, it's one of the top offensive minds in the country. I think there's a chance to get better. But the father said that Iggy's gone, and also the other guy that's gone is Charles Matthews. While not being a younger player, he still had a mm-hmm. year left.
Yep.
And I agree with you. I think, you know, it didn't hurt the decision. How about that?
No, that's right. I think, look, if they had all come back, and I don't think Charles Matthews was ever coming back. He was
right.
A fourth-year senior. He'd been in college for 4 years. And really, there wasn't much more he could do to – the NBA will like him or they won't like him. But, yeah, I think it's hard because you're recruiting and you're recruiting a certain player. Look, it happened at Penn State last year with Tony Carr. It's hard when you have a plan and then all of a sudden the plan is different because and look, it's their players' right. They can go if they want to, but it does make it more complicated. That is the one good thing about the NBA. You don't have to deal with recruiting, and once players are signed, you're going to have them. I mean, sometimes that's a good thing and sometimes it's not a good thing, but they're not going anywhere. They're nowhere they're going to leave unless you want them to leave.
Plus, he's 66, a five-year contract at 71. He's got cash.
No, I don't see a lot of downside for John.
No.
On this deal. If it doesn't work, his legacy is cemented. He's going to go into the Basketball Hall of Fame someday. A couple of Final Fours. What's he, over 800 wins now,
yeah,
I think, at all the different levels that he's been at. So, yeah, he's got a classic Basketball Hall of Fame resume. Would he have loved to have won a national championship? Of course, everybody would like to, but it's hard. It's really hard. I mean, but it's also hard to win an NBA title. And he's coming from way back at Cleveland. Because let's deal in reality. Cleveland has never really been a strong franchise other than a few years when they had like Brad Daugherty and Mark Price and those guys. And I'm talking way back in the 80s. But pre-LeBron, they were horrible. Mm-hmm. LeBron, they were great. LeBron leaves, they stink. LeBron comes back, they're great. LeBron leaves, they stink again. I think we get the point, and he ain't coming back this time.
Yeah, there's a reason why you continue to be in the neighborhood of the number one overall pick.
Right.
You know, I don't care whether it's the Bennett kid or Kyrie Irving or before that LeBron. There's a reason why, or now, Brad Daugherty. There's a reason why you have the number one pick, you and the Clippers. I mean, that for people who never, now, like you and I at least saw Elgin Baylor play. Most years for a lot of people, it's like Elgin Baylor, there he is again. He's the general manager of the Clippers. He keeps showing up at the draft lottery.
He's at the lottery every year. That's tomorrow night. That'd be interesting to see. Coach Beilein, that could be his first win, right? If they get the number one pick, and I think they have as good a chance as anybody at it.
Right. New college basketball rules. This is the year, 2019 was the year of the rules change. June 5th, they'll officially vote on this. The key ones are moving the three-point line back to the international line, which you and I witnessed in the offensive rebounds go to 20 instead of 30, which we witnessed in the NIT. So those are the two prime ones. Dick, we watched it play out live in five games last year. Actually, to be fair, we actually saw it play out in six because we also watched the Western Kentucky-Utah game in person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What'd you think of it?
I thought it was fine. I'll tell you why I thought it was fine, Steve. I noticed no difference.
Exactly.
It was the same game. Certainly, Shep Garner wasn't affected by it. Tony Carr wasn't affected by it. They could make their threes from anywhere. And I think the good three-point shooters, it's fine. The 20-second thing I think is great because I think it's so brutal when you play 30 seconds of good defense and then, like, a shot caroms out weirdly and you don't get the rebound and you got to play 30 more. Now you only have to play 20 more. I think that's rewarding good defense. I don't have a problem with that. And if it opens up the court a little bit more, which obviously is the object of this, then I'm all for that.
In the last 2 minutes of regulation and in overtime to call timeouts themselves, that was another one that they're recommending.
Yeah, every coach who's a control freak will love that. No coach ever wants to leave a game with a timeout. So I'm fine with that. I'm just amazed how many timeouts I see called, Steve, not just in college but in the NBA. Then after the timeout, you go, what the hell did they just talk about?
Right.
You watch some of these plays, you go, wait a second. What just happened here? And it's interesting. Sometimes the non-timeout, and witness the Ohio State game in the Big Ten quarters last year for Penn State, the non-timeout is sometimes better than the timeout because it also gives the other coach time. But, hey, I'm fine with it. But I know every coach will love it because they do like control.
Also, in the last 2 minutes, the ability to review goaltending. I can understand, Dick, off the backboard. I've always thought that should have been reviewable anyway.
Uh-huh.
If a ball hits the backboard, because that one you can see.
Yep.
But, boy, that whether the ball's coming down or not, that's...
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Steve. It's one of the hardest calls in basketball to me. I'm amazed how many referees get it right because I remember a game. Actually, I think it's the only game I ever saw. I don't remember another game I've ever heard of that was decided on a goaltend. It was a St. Joe's LaSalle game at the old Civic Center in Philly. And I think Rap Curry shot the ball for St. Joe's and LaSalle kid goaltended it. And it looked like goaltending live until you actually saw the replay, and it probably wasn't. Could you imagine that? Or a buzzer-beating goaltend, and we're going to have to look at it for 10 minutes. What could be worse? Only a DQ in the Kentucky Derby, right?
It's later in the week we got that one. Hey, it's a fresh field.
It is that.
So... at the end, when you watch the Kawhi Leonard shot, you know, you're sitting there outside of Philly. That's a hard way to lose, man, watching the ball hit the rim four times.
Yeah, it was interesting. When I saw it live, I actually thought it hit the backboard because I couldn't figure out how it could land so softly after the first bounce. But it didn't. It didn't hit the backboard. It just went straight up. I didn't realize until this morning. It looked like it went straight up in the air. on the second bounce that had a little forward spin, just enough to go to the other side of the rim where it teetered precariously. Is it going off or going in? The still shot from the Toronto photographer is one of the great sports still shots ever. With the ball sitting inside the ring, you now know it's going to go in. With Embiid staring at it from out of bounds and Leonard crouched down, I mean, people all around. That's one of the legendary sports shots. Yeah, I don't know how that shot went in. I don't think you could do that 100 times and have it bounce like that.
No.
Most of the time that ball is going to bounce to the opposite side, like 90% of the time, but somehow it was just soft enough that it went up straight. I saw one other play like that. This is really going to be crazy. How about this one? Princeton LaSalle, Tim Legler, the ESPN
Tim Legler, yep.
Down two at Jadwin Gym, shoots a three at the buzzer. The ball hits the front of the rim, goes straight up in the air above the backboard, and then just comes down, good, and buzzer goes off. It was just like crazy. So yeah, that kind of reminded me of that last night. I mean, that's 100 years ago when that game happened. But it was hard to believe that was the first Game 7 buzzer beating win in NBA history, because the Michael Jordan Cavalier shot was a Game 5.
Right.
But that's actually hard to believe, right? All the Game 7s, nobody's ever hit a buzzer beater until last night.
I mean, honestly, when I saw that dancing around the rim, I thought you and I were sitting in a gym in January watching a Penn State game.
That's the only thing that didn't happen at Penn State last year. Nobody hit a buzzer beater to beat them.
that hit the rim, bounced around, hit the rim, bounced around.
and that was one of those games which ever side lost, because it really wasn't a very well-played game.
No.
I thought both teams like set basketball back a ways.
The first half was dreadful.
Yeah, it was like, you know, can anybody make an open shot here? It was like the heat was on and nobody could deal with it. But you know what? Nobody's going to remember how bad the game was. They're just going to remember the ending. And the other thing that I thought was interesting, after Leonard missed the free throw, I'd already guess, are they going to be up three? Are they in a foul? And the Sixers run the ball down the court. I don't know if you noticed this, but Butler made, you can't argue with the decision going for two, but Redick was about to come wide open.
He sure was.
The three on the right wing there. Boy, I wonder if he gave it a thought to give it to him. And Leonard was actually trailing the play. He saw Redick, and I'm not sure he wasn't going to get out there and contest it, but it was interesting. I mean, if you're the Sixers, do you want the ball in the air with a little more time gone? And if it goes in, you're almost certainly going to win the game, because they're going to have less time to fool with it. But easy to say after the fact. I mean, when you get a layup to tie the game, you kind of got to take it.
Right. No, I understand that. I also understand Redick was 4 for 8 in threes.
Yeah. No, and it was just, it's one of those. I would say this, if they were like a gigantic dog in the game and it was like a miracle that they were in the game, maybe you want to take that three. But I mean, that was essentially a pick 'em game. I know Toronto was favored, but obviously it was a 50-50 game if it comes down at the end like that.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.